Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, July 14, 2016. South Sudan's ambassador to the United Nations warns against additional sanctions.
What is needed is not the arms embargo. The government must be allowed to protect the citizens and its troops while we work trying to implement the peace agreement again. That's what actually we should put our energies into it.
And the U.S. State Department says the root causes of South Sudan's fighting must be addressed and the U.S. stands ready to help.
We're having a very active discussion about the ceasefire in Juba, about what needs to take place next, about how to facilitate better coordination amongst the groups in Juba to ensure that their armed factions don't go back to violence and they bring this under control.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. But we first go to Juba, where senior members of the SPLM in opposition say South Sudan's national security operatives are threatening opposition members in several hotels around Juba. The Minister for Higher Education and Science and Technology, Peter Nyaba, told South Sudan in Focus from Nairobi that the SPLM IO Secretary General Diu Matok, who is also the Minister for Energy in the Transitional Government of National Unity, was picked from his hotel and tortured by South Sudan National Security. Nyaba says Matok was later dropped back at the Crown Hotel with oblivious wounds on his body. Nyaba is calling on the international community to provide protection to senior SPLM members who are trapped inside hotels in Juba.
Was taken by the national security. They actually arrested him in a very brutal way, you know, pushing him, kicking him. And after they've gone out of the hotel, they push him into his car and doesn't know where they took him. Was beaten up, tried to extract information from him. And when our colleagues who remained in the hotel heard this, they immediately rang the American ambassador, who then now took up the matter and went to see the president. The president said he didn't know. And, but they really brought him back. You know, I think they sense that some danger was coming or some this has been noticed. So they brought him back to the hotel. And all his body are bruises, you know, because of this manhandling. Jemek came to see, and together with his deputy, Konari, they came to see him in the hotel, and they saw his condition. And now we were convinced that really there was a real problem. Our guys are not really, they don't have any protection there in the place.
My understanding is that Diu Matok is a minister in the Transitional Government of National Unity, right?
Yes, yes.
And being a minister,
he's the secretary general of he's the secretary general of SPLM IO.
Yeah, being a minister in the government, he has immunity from arrest. Why was he arrested?
Yeah, but you think that thing is really has any meaning now? Because how could the national security come and arrest the minister? He's the minister of energy. Which means that the agreement, and together with the transitional government of National Unity, has been killed.
And you are in Nairobi. Why are you in Nairobi? You're supposed to be in Juba, right?
Yes, I came earlier before the violence erupted. And given this situation, first the airport was closed. I should have gone back on Sunday, but then the airport was closed. And now hearing what is happening, I don't think it will be just like running back into the fire.
And we are also getting reports that South Sudanese citizens are not being allowed to leave South Sudan, whether through the airport or through the border checkpoints in Nimule or Kaya.
No, I don't know that. But what I know is that people have been refused in Juba to cross the bridge. People of certain from certain nationalities were refused to move, to get out of Juba. And this could possibly be the case in Nimule or in Kaya, you know, because the thing is taking an ethnic dimension.
When you say people from certain nationalities, what do you mean? Which nationalities are they preventing from crossing the bridge?
Well, if you are not a danger, you will not be allowed to go.
Mr. Minister, this sounds a little bit worrying. Is South Sudan getting back to the 2013 situation where some communities were complaining that they are being targeted?
It might even be worse, because now we have even some members from the IOU came from Pagat. Many of them now have disappeared since last night. They've been being collected from their hotels and their whereabouts not known.
How many members of the SPLM-IO were staying in hotels in Juba?
Well, I don't have the number because, of course, I was not there when they came. But these are the first people who came with the advanced team. They are running into hundreds.
And have you been in touch with President Salva Kiir, being a minister in the government? Have you been in touch with him since this crisis started?
I've not been in contact. There's no reason for me to be in contact with him. Yeah, because we only meet in the at the level of the cabinet.
But I understand that he issued a circular yesterday that all ministers and public servants who have gone to UN camps or who have left the country should report back to work.
Yeah, that's right. That thing was announced. But how do I go now with my colleague? Even he was handled in the way he was. And also my chairman is not there, for instance, in Juba. I would not even go to work. I would not even attend the cabinet meeting while my chairman is not there.
And are you in touch with your chairman, Dr. Riek Machar?
Well, not directly, but through other means.
And where is he?
Sorry?
Where is Dr. Riek Machar?
He's in South Sudan.
Where exactly?
He's in South Sudan.
Where exactly in South Sudan?
Well, that is a security mention. A security mess, John. It would not be easy to divulge this place.
That was Peter Nyaba, South Sudan's Minister for Higher Education, Science and Technology, who was speaking to me earlier today from Nairobi. South Sudan's permanent representative to the United Nations says targeted sanctions and arms embargo on South Sudan will not solve the political crisis in the country. Ambassador Akoi Bona-Malwal says the UN Security Council should give President Kiir and First Vice President Riek Machar a second chance to implement the peace agreement. Akoi says the international community should give the transitional government of national unity ample time to address challenges facing the country.
You only come out to sanction somebody who has deliberately decided that that the peace process is not being implemented anymore, or they are withdrawing from the peace process. So now they have to be pressured or punished for withdrawing from the peace process.
But looking at what happened on Friday, Saturday and Sunday, it is very clear that government forces were attacking the positions of troops loyal to First Vice President Riek Machar.
No, that's not necessarily true, John, because what was happening, if you remember, the incident happened on Thursday. On Friday, the president and his two vice presidents were meeting at J1. There was this colonel called David Riau who came in with some troops and decided to barge his way in into J1. And he's the one who started shooting. He shot actually one of the guards at the gate. He's reacting on a false breaking news that was put in the website by the spokesperson of Dr. Riek Machar, saying that, you know, Dr. Riek may have been, you know, detained or something is happening. So they have come in and attacked the government troops on a false alarm. So it was not the government attacking them.
But then the fighting was around Gudele, and behind Jebel Kujuru is where the forces loyal to Machar are stationed.
That's
so the
true,
fighting has been concentrating there. Why is the fighting not all over Juba if it was not government attacking a specific group? Why the fighting was not all over Juba town? Why was it concentrated at Gudele and behind Jebel Kujur?
Because behind Jebel Kujur, on the Ye-Juba road, there was a checkpoint that was attacked by the IO troops, and the government troops were overrun. So this was in response to the IO attacking the government troops at that checkpoint. That's how it spilled over into Gedele.
Mm-hmm. You're saying there's no need for arms embargo, but between me and you, we know that fighting has been occurring in the country sporadically. Raja, there was fighting in Raja, heavy fighting, people died. Wau was attacked, heavy fighting there, people died. Torit was attacked by some unknown gunmen. In Western Equatoria, there are sporadic fighting over there. I mean, lives are lost. Civilians are caught up in this problem. And you, in the government, you are saying there is no need for international reaction. People are dying, Ambassador.
No, we are not saying, you know, if you read my statement today, we have expressed, you know, our sorrow for the loss of lives that happened in all these towns that you have mentioned. But also, if you know the people who are attacking the government forces in this, they are unknown. So now, how do you impose an armed embargo on an unknown force who is fighting the government? So it's the government actually that is going to be targeted. And so actually we looked at it. What is needed is not the armed embargo. The government must be allowed to protect the citizens and its troops while we work trying to implement the peace agreement again. That's what actually we should put our energies into it.
Do you agree with experts in the region, including the IGAD Council of Ministers, who met in Nairobi yesterday? They are proposing that there should be rapid response troops to be on the ground in Juba to protect civilians because the government have not been able to protect civilians. In fact, people want to run out of Juba and the roads are all blocked. Juba Airport are not allowing South Sudanese to leave the country.
John, don't exaggerate. The road are blocks.
We spoke with people at Nimule who are saying that South Sudanese are not allowed to leave the country, Ambassador. I'm not just saying this for the sake of speaking. I'm not saying this for the sake of speaking. There are people in Nimule right now who are not able to leave South Sudan because they are saying South Sudanese are not allowed to leave the country. This is in Nimule happening right now. And I'm just saying this.
Okay, that's your information. I don't have information about South Sudanese being prevented from leaving, you know, to go to Uganda or to go to Kenya. That is new information to me. But I thought you were talking about around Juba. And I was telling you if the roads are blocked for people to go to around Juba is to maintain security and try not to allow, you know, the forces that have attacked the government from leaving Juba. But if you are talking about Numuli, I have no information about that.
That's Ambassador Akwi Bona Malwal, South Sudan's permanent representative to the United Nations. He was speaking to me from New York yesterday. President Kiir told reporters in Juba today he will not allow foreign troops to be deployed to South Sudan in reaction to a proposal by the IGAD Council of Ministers who called for an urgent revision of the United Nations Mission in South Sudan mandate to establish an intervention brigade and increase the number of troops from the region to secure Juba.
As to whether I will accept the intervention force from anywhere, no. There are over 12,000 foreign troops here in South Sudan. What do you need? More forces. What will they come and do? The UNMISS here has so many foreign troops, so we will not accept even a single soldier.
There are reports from Juba that an unknown number of Ugandan troops have arrived in the town. It is not clear why the Ugandan Defense Force would be redeployed to South Sudan once again. Earlier in 2013, Ugandan troops were sent to fight alongside the South Sudan Army when violence erupted in Juba. The U.S. State Department says the Obama administration will focus on supporting South Sudan's reforms as stipulated in the August peace deal. The acting director in the office of the U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan and South Sudan, Andrew Bennett, says the U.S. wants to see the root causes of the conflict addressed and will work with South Sudan's leaders to see that happens.
In the long term, we'll be committed to supporting the reforms envisioned in the peace agreement and seeing a resolution of the root causes of this conflict as it relates to justice, governance, and security mechanisms. We've been engaging for a long time to see more implementation of that agreement, and some of the failures to implement certain parts of the agreement have made it to where this type of violence is more likely to happen.
Apart from engaging the neighbors, Uganda, Kenya, Tanzania, and Ethiopia, Rwanda, is the U.S. government directly in touch with President Kiir and First Vice President Riek Machar? And what are they telling the U.S. government?
Yes, we absolutely are in touch with both leaders, as well as other government, military, opposition leaders in South Sudan, both from the secretary on down in Washington, and Ambassador Fee in Juba has been very active in engaging all sides very frequently in Juba. We're having a very active discussion about the ceasefire in Juba, about what needs to take place next, about how to facilitate better coordination amongst the groups in Juba to ensure that their armed factions don't go back to violence and they bring this under control. And so those discussions will continue. We're absolutely in touch on a regular basis.
Final question. These two parties have a track record of not respecting whatever they sign. Are you optimistic that this ceasefire is going to hold? And if not, what is plan B?
Well, I think it has to hold. We've seen too much violence and displacement happening in Juba that could be deeply destabilizing. You see the region providing a lot of engaging the leaders in Juba, as well as the United States and the rest of the international community, putting a lot of pressure. So, yes, the agreement remains unfulfilled and not yet completely implemented and behind schedule. And despite the ceasefire orders, there has been certain fighting and violence in Juba since then and elsewhere. And so the pressure will continue to grow and be focused on ensuring that those commitments are adhered to and that we can move forward to get this back on track in a longer-term peace process.
That's Andrew Burnett, the acting director in the office of the U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan and South Sudan. He was speaking with me yesterday at the State Department here in Washington. The office of the U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan and South Sudan provides funds for South Sudan in Focus radio program. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, UNICEF says they are helping thousands of displaced people in Juba, but they need help. We will have more on this after this.
Starting July 18th, VOA's team of correspondents, analysts, and online journalists will provide extensive coverage of the Republican and Democratic Party's political conventions. It's where delegates officially choose their presidential nominees ahead of national elections. So tune in and stay informed with VOA's coverage of this critical part of the U.S. presidential election, right here on VOA.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is one of the earliest memories you have of your life?
My memories is that I did not have a good life when I was still young because I did not have my mom. And then my stepmom tried to mistreat me, but God helped me to see that I can be what I am.
When I had a very nice shoe for my dad when I was in the boarding house, it was called Dog Muff. And then I led a parade, and that day we were first. My section was first in school.
Myself and my friends went to steal some fruits from a neighbor's house, and he came back and brought police into our home. I think I was 5. And we were all run away, hiding behind cupboards and all kinds of tables and everything.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan peace activists are calling on the humanitarian aid agencies to step in and help thousands of people who have been displaced by the fighting that broke out last week in Juba. Sudan and South Sudan Council of Churches say citizens should have the right to move about freely. Many roads remain closed on the fourth day of a ceasefire that appears to be holding. Tito Justin reports for VOA from Juba.
The South Sudan Council of Churches told the reporters in Juba today that most churches' compounds in the capital are being occupied by thousands of displaced civilians. Many people, including traders, say their property was stolen during the 5 days of violence. Chol Rubang Loth, chairman of the South Sudan Peace and Reconciliation Commission, is asking for help from the international community.
People lost a lot of things, lost a lot of properties, food and everything. Therefore, there's a need for immediate intervention, for relief, for food and non-food items for the people of Juba town. So that is a situation is very bad. the earlier intervention is done, the better. Otherwise, it can lead us into more crisis than the situation we are in today.
Earlier this week, traders in Juba's Jebel Market accused some SPLA forces deployed at the market of looting their shops. The traders have asked for assistance from the government to restart their businesses. Betty Sunday, coordinator for South Sudan Women Forum, is calling on authorities to quickly investigate the recent deadly violence. Sunday says civilians in Juba have become innocent victims in the fighting between SPLA and SPLA-IO forces.
We think that when they sign the peace agreement, things will be calm. Now we are losing our trust even to them. We trust them that they have signed the peace agreement, and we appreciate them. We appreciate the effort that they are doing. But unfortunately, what happened? So we need eager to investigate. We're calling for the international community to see what is going on.
And Sunday says South Sudan's leaders should investigate what happened in Juba. She says people are still panicked. Edmund Yakani, Executive Director for Community Empowerment for Progress Organization, agrees. Yakani says the unity government should assure people about the future of the country. Many roads from Juba leading to neighboring countries has many roadblocks despite the ceasefire. Flights at Juba International Airport are open only to foreigners and international aid workers in the country. Security operatives are not allowing South Sudanese to leave the country. A migration officer working at Juba International Airport, who declined to be identified for fear of retribution, confirms that citizens are being barred from leaving South Sudan. He did not offer an explanation. Yakani says it is unacceptable to prevent citizens from leaving the country.
Let South Sudanese also be given a chance to the freedom of movement. Whoever fails, he or she is not feeling safe. Let he or she be allowed to travel, because it's within our Bill of Rights. It's part of our constitutional mandate to ensure that citizens enjoy their freedom of movement. Whenever they fail, they want to move, they should be given that. So I'm appealing in humble way that to the government that please open the routes, both meaning by air or by land, for South Sudanese to enjoy their freedom of movement.
Father James, Secretary General of the South Sudan Council of Churches, is calling for reconciliation among the rival parties in the country.
The time for carrying and using weapons has ended. Now is the time to build a peaceful South Sudan. We pray in a special way for those who have been killed, who have lost their lives, and for their families. And we ask God's forgiveness for those who have done this killing. However, we also urge repentance and a firm commitment from all armed individuals, armed forces and communities, and from their leadership to create an atmosphere where violence is not an option.
Heavy fighting across Juba for a fifth day on Monday left hundreds of people dead and thousands more displaced. The peace activists condemned the violence and are calling for a commitment from South Sudan's leaders to fully implement the security arrangement in the August Peace Accord. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Juba.
The United Nations Children's Agency is working with other humanitarian partners to provide life-saving assistance such as food, clean water and medicine to thousands of people in Juba. The humanitarian workers say they are trying to reach 50,000 people displaced by the violence. UNICEF says its personnel drove water trucks and delivered desperately needed drinking water to thousands of displaced people sheltering at Onmis site near Jebel. Tim Erwin is UNICEF's spokesperson in Juba.
We were able to deliver about 100,000 liters of safe water. The residents of the POC were extremely happy to see us. They've been struggling to find local sources of water, drinking out of a stream. They showed me the water did not look very good.
Erwin says aid workers will be delivering other basic items to IDPs at the Tomping camp.
They were distributing water and sanitation materials today, so things like water containers, buckets, soap, and putting some latrines in place. And I think we were also going to be distributing some primary health kits as well.
The humanitarian campaign led by UNICEF began yesterday after the guns in Juba were silenced by a ceasefire declaration on Tuesday evening. Erwin says yesterday UNICEF teams were allowed to move freely and reach displaced people at different sites around Juba who were living under terrible conditions.
We provided four-day rations to several hundred people in Tomping, but also in the cathedral and St. Joseph's Church.
The UNICEF spokesperson says they are planning to reach 50,000 people in need, but calls that just a planting figure. He says the humanitarian response needs to be ramped up.
There are still only estimates at this point that around 36,000 people were displaced by the fighting. So I think a more precise number will be available in the next couple of days.
He says the fighting in Juba took aid workers by surprise. Erwin says donors need to pitch in more money to meet the massive humanitarian needs of the people in Juba.
Both of these were unexpected and, of course, put an extra strain on our resources, both physical resources and manpower resources, but, of course, financial resources, too.
UNICEF is also working on returning hundreds of lost children with their families. That report was prepared by Nabil Biagio in Juba. Fighting in Juba has displaced nearly 40,000 people in South Sudan and has triggered a widespread shortage of food and water across the city. Markets were forced to close during the violence that began late last week. But as the ceasefire continues to hold, Juba residents are returning to the streets and the markets are starting to reopen. Still, residents say basic necessities are running short. Diplama Mapala Masikos, South Sudan country director, tells Ayen Bior that her team is working to deliver as much food and water as they can to people in need.
Relatively, it's looking better. And some shops, very few, some shops have been open. Unfortunately, there is not much left for many shops in some parts of the city to open because they have been looted. But we are now seeing lesser checkpoints. Of course, military deployment is still there, but civilian movement is there. Shops opened today around 10 a.m., but they were closed around 2 o'clock. Apparently, the shopkeepers do not have enough confidence to keep the shops open.
Has your team experienced any restrictions in their movement as they are trying to assist people in South Sudan?
So in this situation, obviously, when there's so much of risk of movement in the city, we cannot access any community. But it has been slightly better in terms of movement and access yesterday and today. However, not everybody, or let me say most people, are still feeling a bit uncertain. The confidence still needs to be built up that this ceasefire is going to hold and the parties committed to the ceasefire will continue with their commitment, and the level of support and attention which we have got from the international community in the recent days, let's say, it will sustain.
Now, other than water, are there any other shortages of basic necessities that last week's conflict has created?
So drinking water, food, and remember, in Juba, it is rainy season, so we are also concerned about sanitation and hygiene services as well, because there are large numbers of people congregated at smaller locations, making it very crowded. So according to us, as of now, the acute needs are drinking water, food, water, sanitation, and hygiene.
That's Dipmla Mahla, country director for Masiko, speaking to Ayen Bior from Nairobi. That's our show for this Thursday. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could be here. Please join us tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Walolo, badi walele, badi la ma ikadusia, miowo adusia, izi mungu nikoya, katedwe warungo niti otolu mungu si, miowo adusia.
Waluniti, katro wazoniti, katro bakoniti, zimungu matia. Katro waluniti, katro wazoniti, katro bakoniti, zimungu matia.